hier in dem großen Haus, so dass die Isocenter geht auch. Ich habe gemacht, ich kann mit Druck. Ich habe das gesehen, bei just talking briefly about why we're here, in case you're in the wrong briefing. So just to make sure. This is an economic cluster briefing, and the intent of the briefing is to give an update on the progress that has been made in terms of the implementation of the cluster's program of action. And the program of action is an expression of the work that has been done to implement the goals of the NDP. So the discussion really is very much about the work that has been done since quarter one report back. If you recall, in the post-cabinet briefing, we indicated that the reports have been brought to cabinet and have been discussed by cabinet, and this is an unpacking of that conversation. I'd like to welcome the ministers that are present here today. The session will be chaired by Minister of Science and Technology, Mr. Ali Mando, and joining the minister is the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform, Gugile Mpimpi, Minister of Transport, Paul Peters, Deputy Minister of Tourism, Dr. Busile Kasa, as well as the Deputy Minister, Madam. The session should probably take us no more than an hour. We will distribute the statement towards the end of the briefing. There is a longer one, and I'm quite happy to say the DGs are also in attendance, and we would like to invite you to engage the DGs from the various departments. With those few words of introduction, Cape Town, are you guys ready?
Yes, we are ready, DG.
Okay, perfect. I can see everyone is poised here, pens are ready, and I'm going to invite Mr. Pando to lead the session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG, Minister Quinty, Deputy Minister Holloway, so you have to join us here, because this is colleague ministers and deputy ministers, directors general, members of the media, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like, on behalf of Minister Quinty, the chair of our cluster, to welcome you to this, our media briefing on the medium-term strategic framework, first quarter progress report. The MTSF is government's five-year plan for the period 2014 to 2019 toward achieving the National Development Plan. And it is implemented through working on 14 agreed outcomes. Our cluster is responsible for 5 of the 14. Decent employment through inclusive economic growth, a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path, an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure network, comprehensive rural development, the protection and enhancing of our environmental assets and natural resources. Those are the 5 outcomes our cluster oversees. The implementation of these outcomes is directed at achieving the core objectives of the 9-point plan. These for us are growing and transforming the economy, creating increased numbers of jobs, and attracting investment to our economy. Every day of implementation takes the country a step closer toward realizing the long-term goal of overcoming the triple challenges of employment, poverty, and inequality. We strive to create an environment for citizens to flourish, to enter new jobs, and to benefit from the new investments we're attracting in partnership with organized labor as well as the business sector. As you'd all be be aware, our economy rebounded somewhat strongly in this quarter. In the period April to June 2016, we saw growth at 3.3% quarter on quarter. Although the global economic environment remains challenging, the strong growth in mining and manufacturing sectors is positive, we believe, and is heartening for our economy and our efforts. The better-than-expected GDP growth of 3.3% has raised our expectation of improved full growth for the year for South Africa. We have noted with concern the continuous socioeconomic impact of drought and the average dam levels decreasing weekly. As part of our mitigation efforts, several water restrictions have been gazetted, including in provinces other than those that have been hardest hit by the drought. We believe we remain a sound and attractive investment destination. We offer potential investors lucrative investment opportunities. Our country remains a gateway to Africa. We possess advanced technologies and manufacturing capabilities, sound financial institutions, and a legal framework that protects investors. We also have a sophisticated services industry. Our investment initiatives leverage substantial private sector investments in the quarter we report upon. These investments demonstrate the measure of confidence that global manufacturers have in our South African economy. Overall, we're very pleased at our tourism arrival figures, which are far better in this quarter than they were last year. This may be partially as a result of the interventions of the Interministerial Committee on Migration. The Departments of Home Affairs and Tourism have been working together to ease the regulations to support increased arrivals of tourists to our beautiful country. The Department of Home Affairs has introduced new technology, such as biometrics at some ports of entry, to ensure ease of passage for tourists. The efforts of South African tourism to market and promote South Africa have also contributed to increased tourist arrivals. South African tourism has established offices in key markets, and I understand we're seeing double-digit growth in tourist numbers from India and China in particular. We also, in terms of investment incentives, have seen very positive contributions through the Industrial Development Corporation's funding approvals. The approvals for 2015-16 financial year amounted to 14.5 billion rand. The funding approvals for black empowered companies, including our black industrialists, were at 4.9 billion rand in the past financial year. The funds to youth-empowered enterprises stand at 970 million. The jobs supported through IDC funding were at 15,272 in the financial year 2015-2016. We have asked the Department of Trade and Industry, as well as Treasury, to look at the level of investments that we're making through the IDC and the number of jobs being established in order to assess whether the investment levels and the number of jobs that have been generated are actually equivalent and merit the substantial investments the IDC and government are making. Black Industrialist Program, administered by the Department of Trade and Industry, which aims to create 100 black industrialists over the medium term period, has approved four applications valued at 500 million rand in the agro-processing, plastic and pharmaceuticals, electrical equipment, and metal sector. Stakeholder campaigns have been implemented to inform potential applicants of the program and provide support in the development of their business plans. There were many more applications than the four that have been approved, and so we have agreed that we should do far more to ensure there's greater information to potential participants and support so that the applications and business plans we receive can actually be invested in through this program. In the quarter under review, we also introduced measures to support the steel industry through the challenging global conditions. One of our key areas of activity is that of unlocking the potential of SMMEs, cooperatives, township and rural enterprises in order to lift our economy to a new level of growth. 280 rural enterprises, 181 township enterprises, and 147 existing SMMEs were assisted with skills and startup support so that they can run their own businesses successfully. The Black Business Supply Development Program supported a further 130 SMMEs, which in turn created 2,116 jobs. The Small Enterprise Finance Agency, in partnership with Coca-Cola, has committed an additional 120 million rand to support SMMEs in townships. The Cooperative Incentive Scheme helped 44 cooperatives build their initial asset base and further supported 65 cooperatives through capacity building programs. Efforts to create decent employment opportunities for our people include the revitalization of industrial parks in townships. The revitalization of the Butsabelo Industrial Park was completed in June this year. In the past few months, the value of the innovative approaches to competition by the Economic Development Department was demonstrated through the Coca-Cola bottling plant merger and the acquisition of SAB Miller by the world's largest brewer, AB InBev. The Ministry of Economic Development negotiated agreements that have very significant Black economic empowerment components. Between the two transactions, a sum of 1.8 billion rand will be set aside to promote economic activity by small-scale Black farmers, Black-owned retail outlets, and other businesses that bring historically disadvantaged South Africans into the economy. For example, AB InBev will make more than 600 million rand available to develop a local supply chain that will include 800 new small-scale Black farmers. In addition to this funding, Coca-Cola agreed to set aside 20% of the equity in the group for Black South Africans and to ensure a similar percentage of shares are set aside for BEE partners in Appetizer. Similarly, the Black-owned beer brand Soweto Gold will now be entitled to be stocked in SAB Miller-owned fridges and display units at Caverns. Strategic interventions will be implemented in 97 identified municipalities in the next 18 months under the Integrated Urban Development Framework, in order to build cities and towns that are socially integrated, economically inclusive, and globally competitive. As part of our efforts to provide the skills needed to grow the economy, 4,749 new artisans have been certified by the National Artisan Moderation Body in this quarter. A further 24,324 workplace-based learning opportunities were taken up. One of our challenges has been to ensure consistent energy supply. This requires development and maintenance of infrastructure. Eskom accelerated the delivery of the build program with Medupi Unit 6 and Ingula Units 2 and 4 reaching commercial operation. The units are now providing electricity to the grid. Integrated energy centers are being built to provide products such as paraffin, diesel, petrol, gas, and gas burner stoves that serve the energy needs of communities. In the quarter, 49,314 more households were connected to electricity to grid, while 600 households were connected to off-grid technology in rural areas. In terms of our accelerated rollout or implementation of the integrated rapid public transport network, four cities, Johannesburg, Tshwane, George, and Cape Town, are operating carrying 130,000 passenger trips. Five more cities are expected to commence services in the year 2017. We're also implementing the Samba Songye program. Successful road projects have been completed, including 155,392 square meters of pothole patching, resealing of 767 kilometers of roads, 10,355 kilometers of roads regraveled, and 76,350 kilometers of roads bladed. Anyone who says that there's a big in South Africa is not hard at work, doesn't know what they're talking about. The program improves access to services and provides job opportunities, particularly for rural communities. The state-owned companies and the private sector continue to invest in upgrading telecommunications infrastructure and networks. Working with provincial departments of education, Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C, we've managed to connect an additional 456 rural schools to ICT infrastructure, including Wi-Fi. A dedicated broadband war room aimed at fast-tracking the rollout of access to high-speed internet for all citizens within the next 4 years has been established. The NDP vision for broadband is that by 2020, citizens should have access to affordable broadband. Our investments in science and innovation have attracted significant international interest and foreign investment in research infrastructure. The construction of the Meerkat Array, the precursor to the SDAA, is proceeding well. The recent decision by the United States National Science Foundation to declare HERA, or the Hydrogen Epoch of Reionization Array, a project of the SKA, and to expand HERA through an investment of $9.5 million is a welcome affirmation of the research and development capabilities of South Africa. The recently refurbished Kuntuse Observatory dish in Ghana is now fully rotational due to the work of both South African and Ghanaian engineers and scientists. This is further evidence of the growing influence of science, technology, and innovation in Africa. On the subject of water, 24,000 households enjoy access to piped water through work in the first quarter. In addition, 11 accelerated community water infrastructure projects were implemented and 223 rainwater harvesting tanks were distributed for various household use. In the period under review, we saw the Pongola Port Valve Water Scheme completed in KwaZulu-Natal, the KSD Wastewater Treatment Works completed in the Eastern Cape, and the Kalahari East to Mier Pipeline completed in the Northern Cape. We've also made good progress in the establishment of agri-parks, and I think, Minister, we should have our next briefing at one of the agri-parks. Two agri-parks are fully operational in Ngoga in the Eastern Cape and Springbok Bun in the Northwest Province. Six other agri-parks are in the construction phase. Together with the farmers and the private sector, we will unlock markets and export opportunities for agri-parks. We've also made progress, which is good, in ensuring that land is in the hands of those who've previously been denied such access. We've increased the number of smallholder farmers, bringing underutilized land into production, and rehabilitating a great number of acres of land. 44,588 acres of land was allocated to smallholder producers in this quarter, so contributing to the living conditions and economic opportunities of these beneficiaries. We've also empowered previously disadvantaged farm workers and farm dwellers to become smallholder producers by providing them with access to productive arable land. 9,155 smallholder producers were further supported through various initiatives. 102 additional land reform farms are currently under the recapitalization and development program. To date, 13 sites have been approved for implementing the strengthening of relative rights for people working the land, or commonly called the 50-50 program. 1,134 hectares of underutilized land was brought into production. This has changed living conditions of many of our citizens, ensured security of tenure, and facilitated their ability to earn an income. The one household, one hectare program has assisted 620 households to obtain security of tenure on land to enable them to grow their own food and participate in the local economy. A further 22 youth cooperatives will benefit from the Fortune 40 program, which trains young people in agricultural activities across the agricultural value chain. 107,740 hectares of land is in rehabilitation under the Working For or On Land program. 13,394 hectares of land have been rehabilitated in the Land Care program. Support to agriculture extends to the revitalization of 16 irrigation schemes that will benefit 664 farmers and help 265 resource poor farmers access water for production. The expanded public works program created 189,150 work opportunities in the quarter in all four EPWP sectors. 68.3% work opportunities for women were created, while 1.9% were created for people with disabilities. So in conclusion, we believe that overall, there has been noteworthy progress over the quarter towards achieving the NDP targets as reflected in the MTSF 2014-2019 outcomes. Over the coming months, our cluster's immediate priorities include expediting full implementation of the 30% set-asides to unlock the potential of SMMEs, cooperatives, townships, and rural enterprises, fast-tracking the implementation of 10 of the 40 priority investment projects, coordinating the implementation of the quick win interventions that will be identified through the Agriculture Land Reform and Rural Development PAKISA, for scaling up of successful oceans economy projects and expanding coastal and marine tourism to create more jobs. Fifthly, completing the integrated energy plan to provide certainty on electricity pricing and investment in generation capacity. Six, to deploy locally developed technologies. Seven, prioritizing water savings and putting measures in place to minimize water losses. And eight, to continue to support labor-intensive sectors to create employment. We request all South Africans to play their part by being active in initiatives that create jobs, promote investment, and build a more inclusive economy. So together, let's move South Africa forward. And I'm glad, Minister, that the gentleman responsible for the camera over there found something to lean on before he fell. Thank you. Thank you very much, colleagues.
Thank you, Minister Pando. I'm sure I have your permission to formally welcome Deputy Minister of Labour, and for the record, it's Deputy Minister Madala Masuku from the Economic Development Ministry. Colleagues, I'm going to invite questions, and I will take four questions in each round. The rounds will alternate. We'll start with a round here in Pretoria, and then we will respond to those questions, and then give the colleagues in Cape Town an opportunity to ask four questions. Of course, follow-ups are permitted, and I would just ask that you do your follow-ups in the subsequent round that returns to your respective cities. I would also ask that when you do speak, if you can introduce yourselves and the media that you represent. And most importantly, each of the microphones has a button. You need to press the button. If you don't, you won't hear what you're saying. And of course, switch it off so that you don't hear if you're saying anything that's not complimentary. Can I take the first round here in Tshwane?
My name is Terence Creamer from Engineering News. It was mentioned in the statement that the steel sector got some support during that court under review. And subsequent to that, there's also been an ITAC safeguard investigation and an agreement on the pricing model. And I'm wondering if there can be an update from the DTI officials here as to what is happening with the ITAC safeguard investigation, how close is it to resolution, as well as giving details of the pricing model agreed with AMSA and how they respond to the growing criticism of protection for AMSA that is coming up in the market. And secondly, if the cluster deliberated at all on the impasse that's been created in the renewable energy and IPP sector since Eskom's refusal to sign additional PPAs with independent power producers, which has left some renewable projects stranded, as well as some coal baseload projects stranded, and if they could give some time definition to when we should expect the IEP and the RP to be published, and whether there was any reflection on whether about the wisdom of it of proceeding with the nuclear tender on Friday in the absence of the IEP and RP. Thank you.
Terence, it was you took all four questions. So okay. Just to recap, the questions relate to the steel sector. The follow-up talked specifically about the ITAC safeguards and the status of that investigation. Terence would also like to have a sense of what is happening in terms of the pricing investigation undertaken to look at AMSA's model, as well as an update on the renewable energy IEP timelines, specifically relating to the IEP and the IRP. Okay, so.
I'm going to ask DG Lionel October to respond on the steel matter. We could start with that. If the colleague really needs the level of detail he asked for, I think he knows where to find the DTI. But let's provide a brief response.
Yes, thank you, Minister Pando. Yes, we've got a very detailed response, because I think just 2 weeks ago the minister and the entire steel team was in Parliament. So I think with Engineering News, we'll maybe we've got the full details here. But essentially, what we have doing, the pricing model has been agreed, both by government and with ArcelorMittal, and we've had extensive discussion with the downstream steel fabricators as well. So there is consensus on a model in which we hope to moderate the price increases, which will be given by ArcelorMittal. But as I said, the full detail of the formula ITAC has already introduced tariffs on a number of steel products, and there are a few that are still in the pipeline. And again, the full details we will make available. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, TJ. Mr. Quinty, did the cluster discuss ESCO and the IPP contract? Could you respond to that? Could you just speak?
No, Minister, we did. There is no change in the government, of course, on the IPPs. Nothing has changed. So remember that government makes the policy.
Sorry for interruption, Minister and the Chair. I think the mic is too far, and colleagues down here in Cape Town, they are requesting that we fix that so that they can hear the Minister. Thank you.
The response from the Minister that government has discussed the matter of the continuation of the IPP program, and government has affirmed that the IPP remain part of government's response to the energy strategy of the country, and that it is government that determines policy. The IPP program is part of government policy, and the role of the entities is to implement what has been determined by government. The wisdom of proceeding with the nuclear tender, is there anyone from the Energy Department here? I wasn't aware there's a nuclear tender, I must say. Yes, energy.
Minister.
Yes, please respond.
We're from the energy department. To the best of our knowledge, there is no energy tender. What is happening on Friday is that the minister announced on the 7th of September that the RFP will be issued by the department towards the
Can I take some questions from Cape Town in the Visa Center? If you can assist me there with the four questions from that side, if you can.
Yes, DG. Just before we started the questions, they wanted to establish who is the person who makes any input from the floor.
From the
Energy Department, to be specific.
Sorry, I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Sandro Maimani.
Thank you very much, Tandiwe Maimani. We'll now shoot straight to the questions. Question number one.
Good morning, Ministers. Linda Ensor from Business Day. The 30% set-asides, has that been legislated for? I know it's for a long time been the intention, but how has that been embodied in regulation or legislation? And if I may, just clarity on the Black Industrialist Programme, that figure of 500 million, is that for the quarter? And what would be the totals, both in terms of number of industrialists and amounts advanced since inception? Thank you.
And the second question will come from Paul.
Good afternoon, Minister. Paul Vecchiato from Bloomberg. Just on you and Minister Quinty's response on Eskom and the IPPs, you said the entity has to, the policy government and the entity has to implement government policy. Are you saying that government's telling Eskom to continue with the IPP program? And if so, have you had any discussions with Eskom on that? Thank you.
That will be that for now. There will be follow-up later. DG will only take the two. Those are the two questions from Cape Town. Over to you.
Thank you.
Well, good afternoon to Ms. Ensor. I know we've got different times, but I think it's afternoon in Cape Town as well. The Black Industrialist Program, a fairly new program, DGDTR. Could you comment on that?
Yes, thanks. Yes, the figure is there, it's for the quarter. The progress to date from the inception of the program, which came into effect since January this year, is 22. 22 black industrialists have been approved by the DTI and the various DFIs, which is IDC, PIC, Land Bank, CIFA, and the consortium of funding institutions. Our target for the first year is 30, and then 40 in the final year. So as I said, we're quite close to the target for this year, but it's 22. I'll try to get Linda the exact the quantum of what that 22 is in investment terms.
Then the first question she asked was the 30% set aside, whether this is in legislation or regulations, is it provided for in a legal instrument?
I think National Treasury will be reporting in the next few days, but I know they've finalized both changes to the legislation and new regulations, so it will be captured in the regulations.
Thanks very much. And then Eskom, Minister Quinn,
yes.
A call from Bloomberg suggests we shouldn't be telling Eskom what to do, whereas we think the ITPs are
yes, the DDG responsible for this program, the DG Japan, briefed us fully, and we asked this question directly, exactly as Paul raises it. The response was, this continues to be the policy of government. Remember that the Department of Energy is responsible for policy formulation. And it has not changed at all, and government has not changed at all. So ESCOM is supposed to implement government policy, and that is the position of government led by the Department of Energy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ministers. Can I tempt a few questions from Pretoria? Okay. Back to you in Cape Town. I think there was a possibility of a follow-up. If you can capture those for me.
Yes, indeed, DG. There's a follow-up from Linda.
Yes, ministers. From our understanding, ESCOM and a interministerial committee involving the energy minister was discussing the whole question of the cost to ESCOM of the RPP connections to the grid. And until a decision emerges from those deliberations, government policy remains as is. So my understanding is government policy could change in future, arising out of those deliberations, but until such time, government policy remains as is. Maybe you can just correct or confirm that. And then also to the Labour Minister, I think mention was made at some stage about legislation providing for strike ballots. I don't know if any change has been made on that and what can be pending. Thank you.
Yeah, that will be all for now, DG. Hand over back to you.
We'll start with the Deputy Minister of Labour, Deputy Minister of Minister.
Oh, thank you, Minister. The question of labor balloting is one of the issues that are under discussion in the talks that are led by the Deputy President. So we're not in a position to categorically state at the moment that indeed that is the position.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. It also wasn't in our report anyway. Minister Quinton, could you reiterate what you said?
The answer is yes, because it was laid out very well by Linda. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Paul.
Terence Creamer again. Just to follow up on the criticism, just on steel, on the criticisms that are being raised in public about further protection. Could the DTI just respond to how they view why it is necessary for further protection for the steel industry? As well as, can I just repeat that earlier question on the time definition for both the IEP and IRP? When does this cluster expect those two to be published? And my question is really, is if we're going out for RFP on nuclear on Friday, would it not be valuable to have the IRP in particular, which is the generation plan and roadmap, published prior to that? And why the cluster thinks it's a good idea to go ahead without that plan? And then I do have one fresh question, which is related to the broadband war room. Has the broadband war room convened yet? Who are the members of the broadband war room? And what is its mandate, or what is its main priority over the coming year? Thank you.
Thank you, Terence, without belaboring the point. I think the focus is really on the first quarter report that talks to the work that has been done in implementing our five-year plan. But having said that, I won't stand in the way of ministers responding to some of the questions that you've asked. You've introduced a new question around the broadband war room, which is pertinent to this particular statement, so I'm sure that we'll entertain that. But it is, in essence, about looking at the work that has been done in the quarter and to assess whether that has made inroads into our economic fortunes. Thank you.
The broadband war room has not met as yet. It will be convened by Minister Gwene. Some of us sitting at this table are members of that war room. Once we have met, I'm sure our convener would be able to provide you with fuller details on exactly what we should be doing. I'd suggest that you might also want to look at the statement issue after the cabinet, La Junta, earlier this year, because it does have some detail. But I'm sure Minister Gwele will be able, once we've met, to provide a greater outline of both how we intend to work and what we'll be focusing upon. On the IRP, our next cluster meeting is set to discuss the next iteration of this, as well as the IEP, and once we've processed what is proposed as a cluster, we would then take that to the formal cabinet process, and once that has been done, we would of course share the decisions as well as the documents with the public. I'm not certain, despite your insistence, that we would be able to proceed with a call for proposals immediately this week. That wasn't my understanding from what was said. And I think it is important for us to have agreed the IRP at minimum before we proceed. So I cannot comment on what Minister Juma Peterson is planning for Friday, but I'm almost certain that she won't be able to publish the RFP on that date. But let's wait to see.
I think Nenan is going to go into the details, but just want to point out that when you deal with the issues of pricing on skiing, you must be aware that we're dealing with an industry that is already there, that is employing people. So when we enter, our interest is more on the sustaining and ensuring that the jobs are going on. And on the other hand, the steel that we produce, we should know that there's also other people that are actually using that, and would like to make use of that for smaller industries as part of extending the job creation opportunities. So when we determine that, we determine it on the basis of that to ensure that those remain in existence without them making a serious price distortion in the market. But because the NRC is in the committee all the time, they're going to be detailed.
As well. Oh, okay.
Thanks, Minister Masutla. Yes, just to follow up, as Deputy Minister indicated, this sector employs 190,000 people. That is in primary steel and in the downstream steel industry. As government, we've had a joint working group with industry and with economic development and DTI looking to save the industry. I think, Terence, the key thing is, in this context, there is a global glut of steel. There's excess capacity in the global market of 400 million tons of steel. And that is why the entire world, including at the G20, countries have decided to deal with this problem, because their domestic steel industries is being decimated. In the United States, they've introduced a anti-dumping of 530% to protect their industry. So this is all the threat. We're living in desperate times. So it is in that context that we agree to protect our upstream primary steel industry, because we cannot afford to lose. It's one of the only products that we actually beneficiate, where we use our iron ore and our coal and turn it into steel. So it's a highly critical sector. So it's in that context. But what we have done, as you know, for the past 10, 15 years, we have been in a running battle with ArcelorMittal to ban import parity pricing. As government, we took on this monopoly, and we told them that they are creating major distortions in the South African market. That is why there was a major case in the Competition Commission for uncompetitive behavior. It is in that context, and now I think we have made great progress to tame ArcelorMittal. That is why, as part of the competition, they've agreed to a price formula. They will no longer practice import parity pricing. And there's now a formula where they will only make a fair profit. And as I said, we've got a disc here, which Stephen will give you, which lays out the details of the pricing formula. So I think we are trying to contain it, whatever the negative effects we have of having such a dominant primary steel producer. But at this stage, the main issue is to save jobs, and to save those 190,000 jobs.
Thank you very much, colleagues. I think we're going to close for questions. I just want to invite you again. We do have the DGs here, and senior officials are available if you require additional research on some of these questions. I would be happy for you to put them to us. Cape Town, you're not at a disadvantage. We do have email, it works. And we'd be only too glad to help you to complete your stories and your research. Ministers, thank you very much for your time.
Could we have some more questions?
Sorry, DJ, before...
Cape Town,
Linda, is that...
Yeah, there's Cape Town, it's banning. They want to ask few questions that are banning. I've got three quick hands. Three quick hands.
Let me check first.
It's burning now that it's afternoon in Cape Town.
Yeah, it's Chantel, it's Linda, it's Paul.
Hi, Chantal from the African Youth Agency. I'm just wondering, earlier the lady from the Energy Department said the RFPs will be issued on Friday, and then the minister said that she's certain the minister wouldn't be able to issue the RFPs by Friday. I don't know which one is it.
Then Linda?
I am not certain that the minister would, given that the IRP is very important to the overall energy framework of government. I'm keenly waiting for Friday. I didn't hear Ms. Maimane say Friday. She said in the next few days or weeks. That's how I understand her.
It was Terence actually put the Friday meeting.
No, she said what's happening on Friday is.
They want to rephrase the question here in Cape Town. I'll give it to Yan Yan with the, yeah, if it was a soccer match, I would say with fresh legs. Yeah, it's just join us. Yan Yan?
Minister Pandor, the Minister of Energy went on record in Parliament the Wednesday before last, saying the 30th of September. This has been confirmed by our department many times. There's absolutely no question about it.
Okay, thank you for the clarity, Yan Yan. We'll give you the details. I'm sure Pandy will follow it up. Yeah? Any other questions?
Yes.
So there are two others?
Yeah, there are a few others. Two last one. It's Gay and Linda. We'll start with Linda.
Yes, for the Economic Development DG, thank you. In the annual report, the Minister mentions the drive to toughen up competition policy. Several things have happened, I mean, like criminalisation, etc. What is the thinking of the department to make collusion and monopolistic practices more difficult? Thank you.
Okay, the last one.
Thanks, Gay Davis, Eyewitness News. Minister, if we could perhaps just clear this issue about the RFPs up, if the Energy Department's representative there, Ms. Maimani, might be able to tell us whether it is the 30th of September, just for that extra confirmation. Thank you.
DG, the fire has died down. At least we can now respond.
Thanks very much, Linda. As we're implementing more of the competition law, it became clear that there are certain adjustment areas that we need to improve on. There will be a number of amendments that will actually be coming in. There are discussions and interactions with role players, academics, and everyone, and also interacting with other people outside the country. But we're looking at areas around public interests, and we're looking also on areas of criminalization of some of the act, and also toughening of the fines in specific certain areas. So that's a discussion that is on now in terms of the areas that we are looking at to toughen the.
Can I just say that as a department we can verify the state and come back to the interest of the judges. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. That information will be verified, and the department will come back to you. As I